Welcome once again to Gardening Talk, back this Monday afternoon. Greg Richard here, joined by Scott Sharp. Scott, how are you?
Very well. It was sunny out there, and now all of a sudden it's gone grey again on us.
No, it's going to be one of those days, I think.
Yeah, up and down, back and forwards, it's all over the place.
Hard to put a finger on it.
Yes.
Not a great day for being out in the garden, though.
Well, it is, but it's not too hot out there, so I guess it's a nice day to be out there and, you know, dig a few holes if you have to. You're not going to sweat too much.
Actually, I didn't think of it that way.
Yeah.
Also, the sun won't be beating down on you. Actually, be a nice day to be out in the garden.
That's why I always have my collar turned up. It's not just a fashion statement that I have.
Oh, I'm going to struggle to recover from that. Scott, what do you got planned for us today?
I thought we'd talk about one of the most hateful trees in the whole wide world that's out in flower at the moment. And everyone seems to want to plant one in their very small urban backyard. That's the jacaranda tree. I know people are going to ring up and argue with me about that now.
I can see that, but I might have to agree with you as well. I think they're a very annoying plant.
Okay, so we'll get to that. Oh, I thought we'd talk about a nice alternative that's coming out in flower at the moment as well, New South Wales Christmas bush, and can we get your jet to fly by using gum trees?
Now, Scott, you mentioned something a bit earlier about jacaranda trees. What's your beef with them? You don't like them.
I wasn't particularly pleasant towards them at first, was I?
No, not at all. It sounded like I've got a real grudge to grind.
I used to have one in my backyard, so yeah, I'm going to sort of grind that wheel on them.
Okay.
Yeah, look, they do have something that is nice.
Some nice cliches by us then, no, I'll point out as well. I don't think we've got any of them right.
So. We like to mix our metaphors
exactly.
Here.
Exactly.
Look, they just do something nice. They have a pretty purple flower.
Okay, that's a tick.
That's a tick, but that's about it, because then they start to drop the flowers and they make a mess everywhere.
Oh, okay, so that's a lot of raking up.
Yeah, and then they grow their leaves.
Yep.
And it provides nice shade, but then they drop those everywhere as well.
Oh.
Yeah. Look, I guess I probably dislike them so much is because we had one when I lived up in New Lambton. It was literally right against the house. It was almost, the brickwork had, you know, sort of been built around the thing. And no matter what we did, it was always a mess at all times of year when the flowers were dropping, when the leaves were dropping. Just wasn't a good tree to have around. And people often come in at this time of year and say, oh, look, I'd really love a jacaranda.
Yep.
Don't they look beautiful and cute? But, you know, would you get a pet and as a baby polar bear?
Well, baby polar bears do look cute.
They do look cute.
I see your point.
Yeah, they sort of grow up and then they sort of tear away at you a little bit and probably eat you. And the jacaranda will almost do the same thing if you plant it too close to your house. So they're not really suitable for urban backyards,
okay,
I don't believe.
Yep.
I always think they need to be at least, you know, 15 to 20 metres away from any gutters or any, you know, just generally away from the house, because they turn into quite a large plant and they have all those, you know, aforementioned problems, all the dropping of the leaves and the flowers. So they are a bit of a problem. Look, they're native to Brazil. They're deciduous, not because of the cold winters, because of the monsoonal dry and wet season over there. And they briefly drop their leaves at the end of the dry season. Then they sort of get them back again when the rain comes. They get quite large. They can get to about 10 to 15 metres. And the thing about them is that they'll actually spread out about the same. So you have to be really, really careful about where you plant. That's why I'm saying, you know, 20 metres into your backyard or forget about it. You
know. 20 metres down the road, your next door
neighbour's
house.
Next neighbour's place, yeah. So if you've got, you know, a villa or an apartment or something, for instance, you're not going to stick one, you know, in a balcony or in the very small backyard. Even your average, you know, what is it, quarter acre block? You know, that'd be something you'd be putting right down in the back corner.
Yep.
Certainly nothing up near the house. Like I said, they're like a baby polar bear. They look cute.
At first they look cute.
But then they get big, so...
They grow up and devour your family.
Beware of the jacaranda. You can get a white flowered one as well called White Christmas, but very, very difficult to find. You mostly see the purple ones around.
Okay, interesting that they're from Brazil, but the jacaranda sounds like quite an Australian name.
Yeah, I guess it does, doesn't it?
I'm assuming that's the Australian name for it.
Yes, I wonder what they actually call them in Brazil.
La Plante. That's French.
Very good.
It's Gardening Talk back on 2NURFM. Any questions for Scott Sharp, give us a call on 49216 216. And we've got Gary from Alabama, and he's also got a question about jacaranda trees. I'm assuming he's defending them, Gary.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to live with them, and but I am struggling to sort of keep it at a nice level. I try crop it at different times of the year, but I'm then wondering if I'm damaging or causing issues with the plant if I cut it at the wrong time.
Look, you're not sort of damaging the plant. The only thing jacarandas do And mate, this is another annoying thing about them. I'm just listing them off here. But you know, they, when you cut them and prune them, they send up these thing called water shoots. I guess it's, you know, like if you held your hand up and your fingers stuck your fingers up in the air, that's what they look like coming out of the tops of the branches. So you lose that really nice canopy shape of the plant. You get these vertical fingers of branches going up from where you've pruned them, and it just starts to look, you know, really, you know, not unsightly, but it just loses that nice shape that I guess you could say. That's another good thing about the jacaranda, to get a nice shape. But as soon as you prune it, mate, yes, you get those water shoots, and it's just a bit unattractive. You're not going to harm it by pruning it at certain times of the year.
Okay, then.
Yeah, they are very difficult to get established. It usually takes about 4 years. You know, they really struggle for the first 4 years, and then they get going.
Yeah, well, I have this one, and it's quite well situated until I subdivided the block, and now my new neighbour has the residue on his house, and I'm trying to, you know, keep the peace, but I can see it turning a little bit ugly towards this, you know.
Look, but, we don't want neighbourly disputes, not good.
No,
so yeah,
right.
Look, something to consider, you know, getting rid of if it's getting too big.
Yeah, okay. All right then, well, I'll go and start chopping anyway.
Okay, thanks for that, Gary.
Right,
cheers.
Thank you.
Cheers, mate. Bye.
Cheers, Gary. Just with jacaranda trees, I think the reason why you may have hated them so much, can I have a guess?
Did you
have to clean up all the leaves and the flowers when they dropped down?
Look, my wife and I, we shared the duties.
Okay.
Yeah.
So in other words, you did them.
No, I'm not going to say that. Stop trying to incriminate me. It's not going to work anymore.
It's Gardening Talk back on 2NURFM. And we've got Beverly from Raymond Terrace. Now, she's got a question about Little Prince.
How can we help you with it, Beverly?
Yes. Well, it's... I've cut... There's three flowers come up on it, and I've cut them off, and they're beautiful. But what's happening? The one lot of leaves are getting brown on them.
Okay. Now, Little Prince, I believe, is a type of protea, which is a plant native to you. Should even be able to get this one.
Yes, it is the proteas.
South Africa.
Yay! So they're very much, you know, I guess South Africa and Australia, I think they might have been joined at one point in time. Don't test me on my geography, but it seems that they might have been. And they have similar climate over there to, you know, what we have in Western Australia. So proteas do very well in, you know, I guess less humid climates. So, you know, Western Australia, even down in Victoria, they'll do quite well where it's less humid. As they get up here, though, Beverly, where it's more humid, they do, I guess, less well than they could. How big is it now?
It's been, you know, going well.
Yeah.
And as I said, I've got picked three flowers off it, and there's no more coming. But the thing is that the leaves are getting brown stuff on them.
Right, okay. Now, that could be some sort of fungal disease.
Yes.
So you might have to spray with a fungicide like coproxychloride or Mancozeb Plus. The other thing that proteas, you know, really actually like is they like a slightly acidic soil. And they'll actually range from about, you know, 5.5 to 6.5. So, you know, it is very acidic. It's probably even more acidic than camellias and azaleas like. So it might be also worth, you know, checking the soil pH as well. Take some soil to your local garden centre and see if they'll do a test for you there. And the other thing with proteas as well, make sure that, you know, they're in a really well-drained position. If yours has been growing, you know, sounds like you're doing the right thing. You've got flowers out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I'd get some of that fungicide and give it a spray with that preventatively.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you are going to your local garden centre, take a couple of those leaves with you and just get it checked out in case there might be some sort of insect or something on there as well.
Oh, thank you. And I agree about the jacaranda. We got rid of ours. And then I have the trouble with the magnolia tree when the flowers come on it. The wind soon takes them off, you know. But
yeah.
It's a beautiful tree. And I think I rang about this before, and it's got mouldy stuff on the thing, and I've been trying to scrape it off, but it's a big job off the branch, off the trunk, I should say.
Oh, okay. So have you been using a fungicide on that as well?
Sorry, darling?
Have you been using a fungicide on that as well, on the mouldy stuff on the branches?
I haven't put anything done anything yet. I've been just trying to scrape it off the trunks.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, if you've got some of that fungicide you're going to use on the protea, you might as well use that on the tree as well if there's some sort of fungal disease on there.
Okay, all right then. Yes, thank you very much.
Thanks, Beverly.
Yes, thank you.
Have a nice afternoon.
Bye-bye.
I think we've hit a raw nerve about the jacaranda, haven't we? That's two on my side so far.
Well, we might see if we can get one going against you here because we've got Scott from Swan Bay and he's got a question about jacarandas as well.
Oh, Scott's not going to go against Scott, is he?
Yes, I am.
Oh, nice.
Mate, I've just actually put two jacaranda trees in.
Yep.
They're only reasonably new. They're probably about 5 foot tall, thereabouts. Now, there's a whole lot of shoots coming out from the bottom. Can I just break those off or do I need to put something over it to, when I break the seal or...?
Oh, no, you can just break those off if you want to. Often your best, look, you know, you don't cut them off with secateurs because that gives a clean cut and then their chances are they're going to reshoot from there. So you just sort of break them off roughly and that gets rid of them for you.
Oh, awesome. No, that'd be great. Thank you very much for that. Really appreciate it.
Okay,
thank
not
you.
A problem. Okay, thanks for that, Scott.
All right. Cheers. That's all right, mate. Thank you. Bye.
I guess that Scott that was actually planting them. He's saying, yes, I like the plants.
Okay.
Yeah, so he is against me.
Okay, that's unfortunate. That's 2-1.
2-1, yes.
So we can help level this up a little bit.
Okay.
And we've got Bruce from Elibana, and he wants to know how you can get rid of buffalo out of couch lawn.
Couch lawn. How can we help you, Bruce?
Yeah, it'd be nice if it was a couch lawn, but that's all. Scott, over the last couple of seasons, I noticed a little patch of buffalo, and I probably should have dug it out then, but it's expanded and expanded in the couch lawn. Now covers an area probably about, 3 metres by 4 metres. I've tried a couple of different tactics on it, but nothing's really worked. I'm just wondering if you'd have any advice.
What have you been using on it, Bruce?
I've tried a couple of the sprays that are not friendly towards buffalo.
Yep.
And what they tend to do is they'll slow it up a little bit, they'll retard it, but it doesn't kill it out, no.
Unfortunately, Bruce, I'm going to be the bearer of really bad tidings here, and I guess it's almost like buffalo up in the Northern Territory. You know, it's a bit feral and they've taken over up there, but unfortunately there's not much you can do to get rid of buffalo out of your couch lawn either. You've been doing the one thing I was going to suggest, and that is get a chemical, like Bindi, one of those ones that says do not use on buffalo lawns.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, like you said, it will yellow it up and slow it up a little bit. And I guess if you do that and then try and pull it out, that might be your best way to go. Unfortunately, it's something you probably should have attacked, back in the day when you first noticed it coming along. Most people want it the other way around. You know, they want to keep the couch out of the buffalo lawn or the kaikou out of the buffalo lawn. So you're doing it completely the other way around.
The couch is the predominant lawn and it's been there for years and it looks nice and I prefer it. The buffalo that's in there is not to water or anything. It's the old one that goes really purple in the winter and browns off and looks bloody dreadful.
Yeah, and that's the trouble with it. I guess it forms a green carpet for you in summer and spring. But yeah, once you get to winter, it does yellow off, brown off and go purple like that. And the other thing, I guess it's quite spiky as well if you're going to walk. Because I remember the old ones used to be really, really sort of itchy and spiky.
Absolutely, Scott, because the leaves on the old buffalo are really quite stiff and hard, and when you run over them with a lawnmower, the kids play on it or anything, and they know about it.
Yeah.
So that's one of the reasons I want to get rid of it. Plus, it's right in the middle of the whole lawn, and the lawn's probably 30 metres by 30 metres, and here's this great big patch of purple during the winter.
Think of it more of an oasis in the middle of your lawn.
I'd like to, mate, but I think I'd prefer to get rid of it. But I'll keep giving it the spray, and I'll give it another try this season, and I think I'll just gradually take your advice and get a knife and just slowly dig it out.
It's either that or plant a couple of date palms there, and it'll all be well.
Buy myself a camel, yeah.
sorry about the bad news, Bruce. A bit of work ahead of you there, mate.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Okay. Thanks, Scott.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Cheers.
You could just put a couch over it.
Yes, very good. You could just put a couch over it, couldn't you?
And get yourself a little outdoor area.
Yes, you could do that. It's very nice.
That's just an idea.
You could have the outdoor TV there as well if you wanted to. Just sit back on the couch.
Imagine that.
Yes.
Middle of summer watching the cricket. It'd
be perfect, wouldn't it?
Oh, I wish I was there now.
Oh, if only Michael Clarke was still the captain.
Well, that's another argument.
Yeah, we won't go down that path.
It's Gardening Talk back on 2 and you're RFM. We've got Anne from Cessnock and she wants to know how you can get rid of plumbago bush.
Hey, Anne, is it taking over on you, is it?
Taken over and it's getting very unruly, yes.
Yeah, look, Plumbago is one of those plants that, again, like a bit like jacaranda, and it also has a really beautiful blue flower. You can get white ones as well.
Yeah.
And look, people turn them into hedges as well, so you can sort of keep them hedged. And they sort of, they're almost like bamboo, I guess. They start to spread through the soil and take over, and you can really hard prune them back, and they'll come back nice and soft. But if you don't, they get really hard and woody, and they get a bit invasive. Yeah. Where's yours, Anne?
It's across the front, but okay. There's other things there too, and it's just taken over everything else.
Did you plant it as a hedge originally, or?
No, not really. We just planted one either end of the front fence and put other things in between, but it's just grown up in between and everything.
Yeah, the monster's taken over. Look, the only way you can really get rid of it is to poison it. And poison it good and hard. What I would do first, though, is I would cut it back down to ground level and then wait a few weeks until you start seeing some nice green little shoots coming back out of that area. And that's when you go and start hammering it with Roundup.
And
kill it out that way. And don't it's not just going to be a one-off thing, though. You'd keep on doing that, probably three applications of that, and then you'd actually try and dig out as much of the root system as possible.
Okay. You say three applications. How spaced apart would it be?
Yeah, you'd wait for anything green, for some new green shoots to come back up, because it only really works on the green shoots. There is another chemical you can get. It's called tree and blackberry killer, but I would suggest that if you start sort of spraying that and pouring it into the soil willy-nilly, it's actually going to sterilise the soil for you. So I wouldn't do that. Roundup's great because as soon as it touches the soil, it's virtually neutralised. You can spray that around. Just make sure, remember, anything it touches and gets on leaves, it will kill. So you have to be careful if it's a windy day. But I think that's the main thing for you. Cut back, water it a little bit even, wait for some new green shoots to come up, spray, and repeat that process two or three times.
Okay, thanks very much, Phil.
Okay, good luck with the plumbago. We've got monsters in the garden today, haven't we?
Yes, we certainly have.
Jacaranda's plumbago. Where will we go next?
Yes, thank you, Scott.
That's a nice theme for our show, monsters in your garden.
Yes, how about that?
I'll write that up there.
Okay, we'll just call it that from now on.
Monsters in your garden special on Gardening Talkback on 2 and UR FM. And we've got Sandra from Thornton, and she's got a question about passion fruit.
How can we help you with the poor thing, Sandra?
Well, I had two passion fruit. I put them in and they both died. Now, we put garden soil, cow manure, potting mix, potash and blood and bone.
And you stuck all of that in the soil and then planted it?
Yes.
Oh, the poor little thing. I think you've killed it with kindness.
Yeah, well, what am I supposed to put in? I bought some more and I'm not sure what to put in the pot.
Okay. Oh, and you've put all that in a pot as well, have you?
Yeah, we made rings out of it.
Yeah.
Like a container. And put part into the ground and filled them up with soil, all that stuff.
Okay, look, the good thing is, what you've sort of done is you've killed it with kindness, like I said. You've actually almost burnt the plant from the inside out. You've put a nice, young, little, sort of cute plant in the soil like that with all these things, potash and the blood and bone, not so bad, but the cow manure. And all of a sudden, its root systems have spread out into all this sort of hot stuff and it's gone, oh, no, burn. And it's just died. It's sort of burnt up from the inside for you. How long ago did you make up that toxic brew, Sandra?
Oh, probably a couple of months.
Oh, a couple of months ago, okay. What I would be doing is just actually going out there and watering it for the next week. Sort of just pouring some water through it and trying to leach out some of that heat that's in there. And then I think you'll be pretty safe to go and replant into there.
Oh, I can still use all that stuff I wrote. It just will keep watering it down.
Yeah, just water it for a week or so and then go and plant in it. What you're sort of doing, I'll use the term, you're cooling it down a little bit. It's not actually hot, but you're sort of cooling it down. You're leaching some of that stuff through the soil and making it safe to put your new plant back in. And I mean, it's a great lesson. People often go and, they'll buy manure and stuff and stick it in the soil and then plant their plant directly in it. And you just can't do that, especially straight out of the bag. You need to mix it through the existing soil and give it a bit of a water for a week and then you can plant in it safely here. When you mix up a brew like you have, Sandra, you just have to be a little bit careful. You can't go and plant directly in it like you have.
Okay, thank you. Listen, can I ask you another question?
Absolutely.
We've got a seed tree. We're going to pot it.
Yeah.
Put it into a container.
Yes.
So can I still use the same stuff on a fig tree?
Yes, you should be able to do that. Again, just make sure it's not a fresh brew. It has to be nice and aged.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, not a problem. Thank you, Sandra.
Bye.
Cheers.
Thank you very much, Sandra. It's Gardening Talk back on 2 Inuwarra FM. We've got Pete, who is from Bellingen. He's visiting Newcastle at the moment, and he's got looking for a nursery man.
Hey, how are you? How are you enjoying Newcastle, mate?
Oh, good. I grew up here, so I'm familiar with the area.
Has it changed since you've been away?
Yeah, I moved out, 2000, I think. I moved up to Bellingen. It's a lot bigger now, yes.
Yes, yeah.
But I'm down here for family, you know.
How can we help you, mate?
Well, I just wanted to add something to the jacaranda debate. I have a disliking for them, massive one.
Yes.
And one of the problems we've found with them in Bellingen, there's some that are about 100 years old, and they might have three trunks on them. But they've got a thing called included bark, which is the bark surrounds the trunk even though the trunks grow together, and then they separate and split and fall over, and they're quite dangerous.
Okay.
Yes.
So that's when they... you're saying how old do they have to be before that sort of thing happens to them?
I don't think they have to be that old, to be honest with you, because you see it happen too with smaller ones as well. But it's the massive ones that do all the damage, you know, like there's a job I've got to do with a tree lopper actually next week, and that's removing one because it's just about to fall over on some power lines.
Now, I've never been up to Bellingen, but have you got a lot of jacarandas up there, mate?
There is. They got planted a lot in the 18th century.
Okay. Yep. So, around the Grafton area, and they do very well up there?
19th century. They do really well.
Yeah.
But lucky for us too, the strangler figs do really well there too, you know.
So they fix up the jacarandas for you.
Well,
I've just got a very, very compelling and mounting case here against the jacaranda today, and thank you for that information.
You're welcome. Okay, thank you.
Appreciate it, Pete.
Okay. See ya.
Jeez.
They are quite similar to polar bears in a sense because they seem to be quite lethal.
Yes, they are. What Pete's telling us from up there in Bellingen, the branches and the things just sort of splitting and falling on top of people, they could be lethal, couldn't they?
They could be.
Yeah.
I'll see how many people have died due to the jacarandas.
Yeah, well, how many people have died of polar bear attack in Bellingen as well? That's probably not going to be a very big statistic.
I think that might be another point to the jacarandas there.
Yeah.
Now, jacarandas has been the hot topic for the day.
It has been. And just to prove that, I am a fair man. I'm not an unfair man.
Yep.
Yeah, I will always give both sides of the argument. Lorraine from Singleton called up. She didn't want to speak on air. I don't know what she was nervous about. Maybe me?
Possibly me. Very intimidating man, Scott Sharp.
Look at me. and she might have thought I was going to say something nasty to her because she was actually going to relay a positive experience. With jacarandas. Yeah.
Would have been interesting to see what it was. Didn't go into the details.
No. Look, she is up in Singleton, so a lot of space up there, a lot of land. So who knows? Maybe they're up there rehabilitating mines or something like that, the jacaranda.
Maybe jacarandas are preventing crime up there.
They could be doing something like that. Yeah.
Very similar.
Yeah.
Hopefully. We've got Graham from Newcastle, and he's also got a comment about jacarandas as well.
How can we help you, Graham?
G'day, Scott. Well, I'm going to make a positive comment as well. In 1983,
yes,
I bought a house in Sydney, quarter acre block, Federation House. It was built, obviously, in the first 10 years of Federation, and the jacaranda tree was planted by the original owners of the towards the back of the block, and it was the most magnificent tree, and every year, you know, in November, December, there'd be a carpet of beautiful purple flowers on the back lawn, and the neighbours never complained, and it was just, you know, fantastic. And when we sold the house to move up here, the thing we missed most was our jacaranda tree.
But, Graham, it was down the back of the yard, you said, so it wasn't over the gutters or anything like that?
No, it didn't. It had spread because it was a very, very big tree.
Yep.
And almost the entire backyard up the carpet, but it didn't reach the house.
Okay, so now I can accept that, but you can't plant them anywhere near a house. They'll clog up the gutters, they'll make your paths slippery. That's when they turn feral.
Okay, now I've got a question for you.
Okay, go for it, mate.
Okay, we built a house up here, and we got it turfed with Sir Walter.
Yep.
And for various reasons over the recent winter, we haven't been able to take care of the lawn. Now, our front lawn is perfect because when they cut and filled to build the house, all the topsoil went out the front. But at the back, where the soil wasn't so good, we've got a few patches where where it's gone brown and it's sort of matted brown. Mm-hmm. Is that something we can recover, or is there an answer to that?
Look at it. You can recover it. Soft leaf buffalo grasses. I guess in winter they go very dormant. And if you've got a track that you go on, you know, out to the clothesline or, you know, around to the garage or where the dog goes around, they don't wear very well during winter, and it takes them some time to come back. What I'd be doing now is just make sure it's well watered. We've had some nice rain, but I'd also go and get some topsoil, some lawn mix, and usually it's got a lot of poultry manure in it. And you could do your whole lawn if you wanted to, because it'll really give it a boost and start building up some better soil in the backyard for you. And hopefully, you know, it should just green up very, very quickly, you know, within a couple of days with that lawn mix over the top.
Okay, great. Thanks very much.
Okay, not a problem.
Okay.
Okay, thanks for that, Graeme.
Thank you, Graeme. We've got Terry from Maryland, and he's got a question about tomatoes.
How can we help you with your tomatoes?
Scott, you said, I think it was last week, that there was a new thing out for the fruit fly. Three-in-one or something, you called it.
Oh, yeah. Look, that was a three-in-one. It was just called Tomato Three-in-One Spray. It would do insects, mites, and fungal diseases as well. And it was just in a little, pressure pack, in a nice bright red package. It looks like a tomato as well.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. And you have it in stock, do you?
I believe we do. Yeah, it's just called Tomato Three-in-One Spray.
Tomato three-in-one spray.
Yeah, I guess Terry, with fruit fly is you have to make sure that you're spraying, but you're also trapping as well.
It's one of those. They took the old DAC pot off the market.
You can still get traps, and you can also make up your own as well. You can get a bit of Vegemite and some Malathon, an insecticide, and actually paint that on the steak as well, and they'll come along and eat that, and that'll kill them too.
Oh, what, Vegemite and Malathon?
Yeah, make it up into a little paste and paint it on the stake of the plant.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Waste of Vegemite, if you ask me.
Oh, I've actually... speaking of Vegemite, I had a huge tub of Vegemite. I think I've had it for like 5 years, and we finally finished it yesterday.
Oh.
It lasts. It's magic.
Oh, that's good. Okay, okay. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks for that, Terry.
Thank you. Bye.
Cheers, thanks very much for that, Terry. So, really, 5 years.
Yeah, it lasted. Look, it might not be 5 years, but...
a while.
It was wild. It was one of the mega ones that you can get, yeah. And I'm going to... I bragged about my tomatoes on Friday with Mark in the morning, but I'm going to brag about them again right now.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I've got nothing to do with it, actually. I think the dogs have helped me
make
it grow, but it's doing fantastic. My daughter, she turned up on Sunday, and she said, "Oh, Dad, the tomato, look at it today. It's almost turning red. It's beautiful. It's just sort of growing over the backyard. I've done nothing to it, and it's just looking fantastic."
Okay, you've washed them before you eat them, though.
I certainly will be doing that, yes, yeah.
So how have the dogs been helping?
I think they might have planted the seed as well.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Oh, right. Gardening talk back on to a new RFM. Let's move it right along. We've got Mike from Lakeland, and he's also got a question about the tomato spray.
How can we help you with it, mate?
Just wondering if you've got a homemade recipe that you can make yourself, with garlic or something like that.
Look, yeah, certainly you can do anything with garlic and chili and mix those up. Usually you just have to be careful, they're not going to burn the plants as well, but you should be okay with that. You get your blender. You just mix it up into a paste with water. I've got no, special, ingredients for that. You just mix up a nice strong garlic and chili paste with some water and spray it on.
Wonderful.
Excellent. You could even make it so it's a paste and paint it on the trunks of the your steaks as well if you wanted to.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Thanks.
Okay. Thanks for that, Mike. Cheers.
Bye.
Cheers. Thanks for that, Mike. It is Gardening Talk Back. Now we're almost out of time for another episode of Gardening Talk Back, I guess you could say. It's all been about monsters today and jacarandas, but Scott, you've got something there about gum trees.
Yes.
I just had a quick glance at that before. And looks quite interesting about fuel.
Yes, it's about gum trees. Now, they've been doing this down at ANU. They've been working out, and it's a doctor as well doing it.
Okay, good.
Not the janitor or someone at ANU. It's someone who actually knows what they're talking about. And they've actually published this study in, it's called Trends in Biology, Biology, and that's the name of the journal. Now, they've worked out that they can make renewable fuels that could power commercial aeroplanes. And they can do that out of eucalyptus trees.
Oh, wow.
So your average gum tree, you need quite a lot. They reckon they're going to need about 20 million hectares of eucalyptus species, and that would produce enough jet fuel for 5% of the aviation industry.
5%.
5%, yeah.
I'm going to say that's not really worth it.
Well, I didn't realise this, but 20 million hectares are actually planted at the moment for pulp and paper.
Oh, okay.
So it's not a huge amount.
Right.
Yeah, and it's very interesting. The aviation sector globally produces about 2% of all human-caused carbon dioxide emissions. So I guess if we could start, turning it the other way and planting all these gum trees,
yep,
as well as, they're growing and they're doing good things for the atmosphere, as well as that, you cut them down or you get the juice out of the leaves or the oil out of the leaves, and you can turn it into make your, fly Jetstar.
Yeah. Well, maybe something a bit better than Jetstar.
Well, I guess so.
Other airlines are available. And then also cutting down trees. Companies love doing that, so that's probably a tick in the box for them.
Yeah, they could put it all over their ads and be fantastic for them. Yeah. But I thought that was really interesting. I didn't realise you could make jet fuel out of eucalyptus leaves. So I guess it's a bit like ethanol.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, something for the future, perhaps.
Yeah.
We've got Frank from Madawi, I should say, and he's got a question about loganberries.
How can we help you, Frank?
G'day, Scott. I've got a friend that's growing, and she thinks it's a loganberry. It's red when it fruits. To me, it looks a bit like a raspberry, but I suppose it's a combination of something like a mulberry and a raspberry. Is it a loganberry? Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah, the loganberry sort of looks a little bit like it looks like a red raspberry. Yeah, it's probably just a little bit more elongated, and it sort of grows in the same way. The leaves, though, are a little bit different. I guess how would you describe those? It's almost like a little fan shape, almost the leaves.
Yeah, almost like a grape, actually.
Yeah, that's the best way of describing it. Yeah, so it sounds like you have got loganberries growing there.
Yeah, well, as they fall onto the ground, because the runners have been shooting, they seem to establish new roots.
Yes, that's right. So they're descending down lateral roots as they go down. Yeah, a lot of climbers will do that. It's their way of clinging onto trees as well when they're climbing up.
I like the fruit, and I'd like to perhaps propagate. So can I? And is it dangerous if it gets out of hand?
Oh, no,
it's
no.
Not like a blackberry, the blackberries in the bush, they can get wild.
Oh, look, it's not like that. Look, any climber like that will want a fair bit of space to run around and take over. So you make sure you can contain it somewhere. You wouldn't sort of plant it in under trees where it's going to start growing up into the trees and through the place. But, yeah, certainly you can propagate that from one of the lateral roots, one of the cuttings or one of the sort of suckers that come down.
Yeah, I've got a trellis and I'd like to try and fill it up. I've tried with passion fruit and I've failed with that, yeah. I'll try something else.
I think the loganberry might be a little bit a little bit more tougher in a way.
Yeah.
So give it a try.
All right. And I've got a jacaranda story.
Oh, excellent. Okay. Are you positive or negative, mate?
Well, you tell me, because I've planted it about 5 metres from a swimming pool.
You're going to have a very negative story about your jacaranda tree in about 10 years' time, I reckon.
Well, it's about 10-year-old now, and I'm still picking up the petals and the leaves.
Yeah.
But it's a concrete pool, so I'm just thinking with it, a concrete pool 6 inches thick, it's not going to damage the pool. It's probably just going to rob the nutrients around the grass around the pool, really, wouldn't it?
No, I'm no structural engineer. I'm not going to comment on whether your pool's going to develop a crack and, all of a sudden you're going to find a root system of the jacaranda and they're having a good old drink on you.
Well, it's salt water. Do they like salt water?
No, nothing like salt water except dolphins.
Or dugongs.
Yeah.
All right, Scotty.
Okay, mate. Good luck with it. Right. I'll be giving that one a good old prune. Very low down to the ground.
With a chainsaw.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Maybe a bit close to your pool there, Mike.
I hope my wife is listening. I won't be able to convince her of it.
Okay.
All right. Cheers, mate.
Thanks, Frank. Right. Bye-bye.
Cheers, thanks, Frank. We've got time for one more call. We've got Kay from Thornton, and she's got a question about Brussels sprouts. Now, I hated Brussels sprouts as a kid, but now I don't mind them.
I love Brussels sprouts.
Little cabbages.
Yep, they are the most tasty, like a little burst of cabbage in your mouth, aren't they? How can we help you with yours, Kay?
We've got Brussels sprouts appearing on the stem. Had no idea that's how they grew.
They do, yeah.
But we've got really huge leaves, and we just wondered whether we should remove some of the leaves so that the sun could get onto the little Brussels sprouts?
Oh, look, I wouldn't do that because the leaves, you know, they're the powerhouse of the plant. They're feeding it and helping the little Brussels grow. Look, if you think they are getting a little bit overshadowed, you could remove a couple, but I certainly wouldn't sort of have a wholesale removal of leaves, you know, just to try and get the sun to them.
Okay. So are there any bugs that can get into them? They're looking really lovely and healthy at the present time.
Yeah, you have to be careful with Brussels sprouts. They're a bit like cabbage. They can get the cabbage moth and caterpillars, so you really just have to be careful about those.
All right, Scott, we've run out of time.
Excellent, okay.
I'll catch you next Monday.
Perfect.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from 2NURFM at the University of Newcastle. Topics range from gardening to health, well-being, pet care, finance, business and travel. You'll find them all at 2NURFM.com.